The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, the topic of desire. Desires are so ubiquitous in human beings that sometimes I think we should call humans human desirelings. Without desire, there would be no real human life. People who have no desires, or almost no desires, are often recognized as being very depressed. Desires are an important part of life, but an important part of Buddhist life is to become wise about desires. And because Buddhism focuses a lot on desires, and sometimes says we should let go of our desires, some people think that all desires somehow are wrong. And you're not supposed to have any desire at all. Just better off if you just were a couch potato and never moved from your couch. It had no desires. But rather, what we want to do is become a student of our desires to get to understand some of the natures of our desire, what desires are, and the different kinds of desires we have. And to be able to recognize the difference between desires that are healthy to have, appropriate, wise to have, and desires which are not wise to have, which are unhealthy to have. And to be able to make that distinction, then we have the ability to choose what desires to act on and what desires not to act on. But that takes some looking and studying of what happens. And first it takes recognizing what kind of desire feels like, what the kind of impulse. Does it come mostly with thought? Some people, they have a thought, I want something. You know, they start thinking about, you know, food. And the way they think about food is a kind of an impulse, momentum, a leaning into that could be called a desire. Some people, it's more emotional. There's an emotional feeling or a physical feeling in the body. It's impulse to want something. And so it's that physical impulse or an emotional impulse that kind of orients us towards something that's the genesis of what could be called a desire, that also is a leaning towards or leaning away or having a preference for something. So how is it for you? You know, how does it work for you? Is it more starting a thought? Does it start with a sense of some emotional change, impulse, or some kind of physical feeling inside of an impulse towards something? Some people can have these impulses to have a desire before they want anything in particular. It's just like a policy that they should have a desire. And then they want, but then they look around to see what they want. You know, what's handy, what's useful, because it's just this momentum of desire can be so strong. When we spend a lot of time having desire, some people are really to have it just, that's kind of their, it's easy for them to have desire, they have a lot of desire. I'm one of those people. I kind of like to think that this, for me, desires are a dime a dozen. And I've learned you just kind of like, they just go through, you know, it's like I have desire and it's just like, you know, the breeze goes through and I'm not troubled by the breeze or just, you know, there's lots and lots of desires. I just leave them alone. I would say a majority of the desires I have, I don't do anything about because they just kind of, you know, I don't even sometimes think they're mine. It's just they float through, they happen and I don't identify with them. Other people, it's aversions are a dime a dozen. And resistance are a dime a dozen. You know, what comes up really easily. It's just kind of how some minds work. It's not right or wrong, it's just how it works. To have a lot of desires, sometimes be kind of living in desires, there's momentum that gets formed that the mind then has a habit to want. And so, you know, wanting, and then, you know, the mind wants to want something else, even doesn't know what it wants, it just wants something. So a feeling of dissatisfaction, a feeling of impatience, feeling of something, like something's going to do it for me. So let's just, sometimes there's a looking without, for a thing to desire without, because the impulse is there. Sometimes when there's a lot of desire, it's exhausting. Some people have a lot of stress and a lot of exhaustion from the incessant operation of wanting something. Sometimes certain very powerful emotions, like being depressed, can be accentuated because in being uncomfortable this way, there's a desire for something, like something. I want help, I want a solution, I want. And the constant wanting is exhausting, kind of is alienating, is kind of. It's a way of kind of being removed from ourselves sometimes, rather than connected to ourselves. So how does desire work for you? You know, when you have desire, how is it born? Where does it live in your body? When you have a lot of desire, what happens to your connection to yourself? Having a lot of desire, do you lose a connection to yourself, oddly enough, because you're so focused on the object of desire? What happens inside of you when you have desires? And then I think it's interesting to feel whether the desire feels natural or, I don't want to say unnatural, but is a desire connecting or disconnecting? Some desires lead to more disconnection from ourselves. So like wanting to eat again, feeling kind of uncomfortable and maybe lonely or something. And so you go to the refrigerator and get a lot of food and eat. And that desire to eat, if you pay attention, it's a kind of disconnect. Because we're not getting settled on ourselves. We're not coming home to ourselves. Some desires are more about coming home or being more settled in ourselves and support that. We feel more nourished when we follow through on some desires. So instead of going to the refrigerator to eat and gorge ourselves, it might be, I don't feel so connected here. I feel kind of out of sorts. I'll go for a walk. I think a walk would be good, a desire for a walk, because walking gets me into my body, feels me more connected. And so that, the result of that consequence then is something deeper that happens that feels good. So to study what the consequences are of desires, what's the consequences of having desires. And when you study that, when we look at the consequences of having desires, it's also looking at the consequences for the next hour or the next day or in the relationship we're in. Is it supportive for the relationship we're in when we have certain desires and act in certain ways? It's supportive for us by the end of the day. Do we go to bed contented from the day from having acted on those desires? Or is it likely if we act on those desires at the end of the day, we feel, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. And so part of a wise life is also to look at the long-term consequences of desires. Like long-term could be how you go to sleep at night if you review the day. How does that feel for you, having done what you did? And pursuing some desires probably not going to make you feel good when you go to bed and you think about it. Oh, I wish I hadn't done that. So to reflect on the consequences is part of a wise life. The possible consequences. And then there's a powerful thing to learn around desires, and that's to learn to have the ability not to give in to a desire. It's a little bit different than letting go of a desire. And that's one of the nice things about meditation practice, is you're kind of committed more or less to sit still for the duration of the meditation. And so if during meditation you suddenly have a desire to go to the refrigerator, you're committed not to give in. So you stay put. Whereas in daily life you might give in, right? But here you get to stay. And so you learn how not to give in to an emotion, to a desire. And there might be even the simple desire to change your posture, maybe for good, relatively good reason, maybe you're uncomfortable. But sometimes even that desire to not give in to it teaches you a certain, or reinforces or builds a certain strength inside of restraint. It builds a capacity of self-monitoring and not giving in to desires, to impulses. And this ability to not automatically to give in, develop a strength of not giving in, is a very, very helpful thing to do in daily life. So we don't, in daily life, we don't make mistakes by being impulsive by the things we want to do, want to say, that might, especially what we say to people. And so sometimes having the ability to, not give in to them is very helpful to develop that. And meditation does that, can be a wonderful place to do this. And I think that one of the benefits, many of the many benefits I got from my years of meditation is all the times that I did not give in to a desire sitting here. And now I feel, I can notice in myself that I have these desires that come a dime a dozen for me. they can kind of come and go, but I'm pretty easy for me to say, oh, I won't pick that up right now. I'm in conversation with someone, I'm doing something, this is not the time. And so it's just, oh, just let it be, let it be, let it be. And I attribute to that ability to do that to meditation practice for me. So that requires being willing to not give in to even, not requires, but that skill to develop the ability to not give in to emotions can be done for healthy emotions, appropriate desires and inappropriate desires. It's a skill to learn. Outside of meditation, to not give in, to not act on appropriate desires, that may or may not be appropriate. Sometimes it's quite appropriate to follow through on a desire. So in Buddhism, the desires are considered important for the practice itself. The Buddha talked about, when the Buddha encouraged people to practice, he talked about arouse desire, have strong desire for practice. So desire has a place, and I think it's a wonderful and a precious part of a human being, certain kinds of desires. The desire to be, compassion is a kind of a desire, and it's a beautiful thing to have the desire to help alleviate the suffering of others. The desire to alleviate your own suffering, desire to be connected to yourself in a deep way, to be free, the desire for practice is a wonderful desire to have. So to kind of give an impression of how these kinds of desires are kind of, some desires can come out of some deep place inside of us. I very much like the English word aspiration, that we can have aspirations. And one of the reasons I like the word aspiration is that usually its connotations are, it's kind of something grand and big. Your aspirations, I aspire to become an astronaut when I grow up, kind of big. But it can be quite small. My aspiration is to have a nice exchange with the supermarket checkout clerk. And that aspiration is not just like an idea you have in your mind, but comes out of something deeper inside. And the other thing that I like about the word aspiration is that aspiration part of this aspiration comes from the word, same word as respire, or respiration, so a breath. And so it comes from, comes from some place, a place deep inside that the breathing comes from, which for me is some place of depth within us. So to practice mindfulness of desire and not give in to desire automatically, but to, instead of giving in to desires, to settle more deeply, to come more deeply inside of yourself, relax more deeply, tune in to the depth of who you are, what goes on, and then from that depth, what aspirations arise from there? What's the heart's desire when you're really settled at ease, when you feel contented and at home and at peace in yourself? What then is the heart's desire? And that heart's desire might be some of the most valuable things, some of the more valuable aspects of who you are. Desires can be a treasure, a fantastic treasure, a fantastic resource inside of us, if it comes from this place that I think of aspiration, from the heart's desire. And my hope is that your practice of mindfulness, practice of meditation, helps you to weed away the unhealthy desires, where they're usually, I can think of them as surface desires, get more settled so the heart's desires have a chance to be heard. Okay, so thank you.